from Louisville Public Media.
Support for this podcast comes from KTC Building, seamlessly blending the classic character of older structures with 21st century amenities and technologies. Residential and commercial remodeling projects of any size. Details at KyleThompsonCompany.com.
Hi, I'm Kyla.
Hey, this is Jay.
And you're listening to Strange Fruit Podcast.
Welcome back to listeners. I'm super excited for today's show. We have a really wonderful celebrity guest.
Yes.
So please, without further ado, welcome. He is a DJ, music producer, host of MTV's Catfish.
Yes.
Even, but most importantly, he is an activist for sexual assault awareness. So please welcome to the show today, DJ Zeke Thomas. Zeke, how are you?
Hey, everybody.
Thank you so much for joining us today. How's it going?
It's going good. Or going well, or, you know, I'm a little still tired. It was New York City Pride this past weekend, World Pride this past weekend.
You were like a celebrity DJ. You were doing all kind of stuff at World Pride. You hosted, but tell us something about what you did there in New York. What'd you do?
13 shows in 6 days.
Oh, my God.
I am tired.
Oh, my God, yes.
We're so glad that you made time for us. So, Zeke, a lot of folks may know you. Well, listen, my brother knows who you are because of your dad, okay? My younger brother, super athlete, I even of course, super athlete, was always talking about your dad, Isaiah Thomas, collecting all the cars, all the shit in the 90s and the 2000s. But, of course, I know you because I'm like, oh, my God, Isaiah Thomas has a gay son. But a lot of folks know you because of your 2017 interview with Robin Roberts, for Good Morning America, and that kind of was your kind of coming out, if you will, as an advocate for sexual assault awareness. Talk a bit about what led you to do that interview and what, well, talk a bit about your experience. You've been sexually assaulted twice. Just give us a bit about your history and what led you to advocacy.
So I was sexually assaulted when I was 13 years old and then raped when I was 27. When I was assaulted, it was by a group of men or a group of teammates, or boys, I would call them, in a van going to our basketball tournament. And it was just very disheartening. It was rough to always have to think of that moment about people you trusted, teammates of yours, doing that to you. And then when I was 27 years old, I was raped off a dating app. But both these moments, although horrific and even, you know, it was hard to talk about them just now even, but they helped me get to the point where I am today and was able to, you know, go on Good Morning America. I went on Good Morning America because I was terrified. I just wanted people to listen to me. I wanted people to hear me. And that's what most victims of sexual violence or trauma, they just want somebody to hear them, somebody there. So when I went on Good Morning America, I was doing it really out of selfish reasons. It wasn't about being an activist or an advocate or, you know, trying to help other people with their traumas. It was really a pretty selfish decision of mine, but it led me to the point of being able to heal and having so many people then reach out to me. And it was really just an inward decision of God kind of putting a moment to me and saying, if you can help, help. If you can't, you can't. But if you can do it, I decided, you know, I definitely need to step into this light and use my platform for some good.
Yeah, I wanted to know from you, Zeke, you said that the Good Morning America interview was a process in healing, right? You sharing your story, you being heard, and you getting feedback around that listening. So what did healing look like for you at 12? What avenues did you take? I know that you've mentioned music was a pathway to healing for you, but what are some things that led you to begin to, you know, heal yourself from this awful tragedy and trauma?
So when I was 12 years old, I kind of just suppressed it pretty much. I wrote it off, and it wasn't until I was really 27 that all those feelings kind of rushed back. And actually, it was they continue to come back sometimes, but healing from the trauma is something that is an ongoing process. It's something that I I'm dealing with constantly. You know, I'm actively still going to therapy, talking about this issue with the likes of you guys. Sometimes it's a good day, some days it's a bad day, but I've gotten to the point in my life where I can always know that there's still another day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love it. So you have become an advocate, an outspoken advocate for sexual assault and sexual violence awareness. Just some statistics. It's been reported that 1 in 10 male victims don't report, and that 19.5 million men have been victims of sexual violence. Was there some apprehension on your part, Zeke, being a man, being a black man? Do you think that male victims and black victims or any other folks who might be racial or sexual minorities, do you think that we might have a tougher time talking about these things? I mean, we have the Me Too movement, but even initially that seemed to be a white-led movement. I mean, we know, of course, that Tarana Burke, a black woman, started it, but very, very early on it seemed to be a kind of a white-led movement, and the black people can be reluctant about talking about sexual assault, whether it be in the family or the church, et cetera. How easy or difficult was it for you as a man and then a black man to take this issue head on?
Honestly, I believe that we're all born equal as kids. We all just, you know, we don't really see color. We don't see race. We don't see religion. We don't see sexuality. So as kids, we're all great. And then these barriers are placed in front of us. And as young black men, we quickly realize that there's something wrong with our skin color. And after that, being different, being LGBTQIA, then you realize there's something different with who you love, who you like, who you're attracted to. So yes, those are definitely two big strikes that a black gay man would have to overcome. But then the third strike comes when, okay, somebody comes and just takes their whole manhood away by assaulting them, by raping them. Not only dehumanizing them just as a body, but literally I equate rape to basically murder of the brain. You literally, your brain is just mush. You don't know how to feel. Your body goes into shock. You freeze. You don't know how to react. You know something's wrong, but you can't pinpoint it. And you're scared to admit that this person has taken away everything from you.
No.
Those three strikes, now you have to go to the police department, to the whomever, who you already don't trust. You already don't have faith in this legal system that is supposed to be able to find somebody who harmed you. So now you got four strikes against you. Not to mention, you know, now you're telling me that, you know, historically the black church or church in general haven't been receptive. So now my faith doesn't love me. It's a lot. Yes, for a black man to have to go through a significant trauma like this, especially being a gay black man. And I hope I explained that clearly.
Absolutely. I was wondering, how supportive was your family or friends, those close with you, chosen family? How has community support or familial support helped you on your journey and path to healing and advocacy?
So my family, like all families, you know, we talk all the time, still wishing. My dad's actually has been in the mood of late. I'm joking about it, but he's been in the mood of late as like apologizing for things he did as a father. Like, you were right. I should have done that when I was just younger or whatever. So he's in very much that mode. But my parents were honestly the greatest parents I've ever had. And they loved me. They cared about me. And still do, obviously, but I had no problem coming out to them. I had a very easy coming out experience in terms of them. It was more difficult for me to admit it to my friends, whether they're my family. So I'm very blessed to have a family who loved me and was able to respond immediately to Christ for help.
Yeah, I love that. And so I want to talk a bit more about that. You have figures like you, your dad being Isaiah Thomas. You have E.J. Johnson, whose dad is Magic Johnson. Now we're hearing about Zion Wade, whose dad is Dwayne Wade. We have Lil Nas X, who just, you know, who's the rapper of what? Oh, what is the song?
Yeah. Old Town Road.
Yes. Who put out the signs? I don't know why we didn't pick him
hey,
up.
Hey, he said he dropped them, y'all. But I wonder.
Yeah.
He literally said he was putting them out there.
He said he dropped them. He said we okay. The ones who were paying attention. But so my question, I guess, is two part. Number one, what do you think? So if you can envision, if you can put yourself in the position of your dad, Isaiah Thomas, or Magic Johnson, or Dwayne Wade. These black men in hyper-masculine sports, these are men's men. These are men that women want to be with, and they have a gay son, right? And they take the path to support their child, right? And I think that I don't think that it's all that uncommon. I think it's a misnomer that black people don't support their queer children, but it certainly is not a popular narrative in pop culture, right? So envision yourself as your dad or Magic or Dwayne and talk a bit about their decisions to be publicly supportive of their children and what that means for little EJ, what that means for little Zeke, what that means for little Zion, to have little black men children who are supported by their black dads. Just reflect on that a bit, if you will.
I'm just going to speak based on, you know, my perspective in terms of Dwayne and Magic not having really adamantly direct knowledge of how they would feel. But I would say, you know, Magic definitely, you know, contracting HIV when he did definitely would have had to change and shift his focus on the LGBT community, because now he was being so scrutinized. Was Magic gay? Did Magic have sex with men? Because AIDS and HIV at that time was still a death sentence.
So
I'm sure, but even prior to that, I know that he grew up, you know, in a very open family. My father, he had one of his brothers die, actually, from HIV/AIDS. So he was familiar with it, had gay people in our family. And actually, when he got drafted to the Pistons from Chicago, his first friends in Chicago were two gay men, or one gay man, and then his husband later on in life. But and with Dwayne, it's just, you know, it just seems like the black community and the black male strong community, you know, there are some bad apples who are not open and don't want to participate, but we have a lot of great, great, strong men, at high levels who are open about this and accept and love based on who the person is, not who they love or anything like that.
Yeah, I love it.
No, so true, so true. Now, you have won a number of awards. You have a GLAAD Media Award in 2018. You were seen as a community hero and got that award for the NYC Pride March. You've DJed all over.
Been on Catfish.
Yeah, been on Catfish with Neve.
Kind of
with Neve and everything like that. So how has this been for you? How has it been becoming this world-class, noticed DJ and being able to do what you love? And then also advocate for folks who are in the same position as you, who need healing, and what is that like? What does that feel like to get to do the things you love and also be an advocate for those who are most vulnerable?
Honestly, I tell my friends and people every day, you know, I'm the luckiest person. I'm very lucky to be able to do what I love, and I'm very lucky to be able to have survived and still do it, because I'm a pretty good DJ. I'm okay. I'm not gonna lie. I'm pretty okay. But that DJing is my true love. There's nothing I love more than DJing. But for 2 years of my life, I was still playing. I was still DJing, but I was either getting high or doing things that I shouldn't be doing. I was not participating in life, because I had been assaulted, because I had been raped, and I was dealing with things. And to lose that, and now to have it back tenfold, I just feel pure happiness.
Good.
Yeah. Truly, and I hope this comes through. Like, things are...
We can hear the smile in your voice. We can hear you smiling, yes.
Yes, yes. Oh, my goodness. So what was it like, though? What was it like with you? You know, you've performed for and DJed for, like, Barack Obama, Jay-Z. Like, I mean, what is Obama like? I mean, can you give us the real tea on Obama? Like, is he really as friendly
honestly,
and sweet
okay,
as he comes across?
Honestly?
Yes.
Obama, Joe Biden...
Yes.
They honestly are the coolest people ever.
Are they really as cool as they come across?
I'm not lying. They're the coolest people ever.
Oh, my God.
Joe Biden
like
loves Earth, Wind, and Fire. Barack and Michelle love, of course, Stevie Wonder.
Yes. Well, listen, you're not just a DJ. Like, you also produce music yourself. So I want to play for our listeners a bit of one of your earlier tracks. I think this track is from 2017. But you mentioned that part of your therapy process, in addition to literal therapy with mental health professionals, which I think is a very important part, I will say, I think that for anybody who deals with trauma, whether that be sexual trauma or any other thing, we sometimes convince ourselves we've healed ourselves, either through religion or just time. But I appreciate that you pointed out in one of your interviews, Zeke, that the medical professionals were a very important part of that process for you. So I want to point that out to our listeners.
100%.
But also, the music was your therapy. And so you have a song called I'm Dealing With It, when you begin to talk a bit about your healing process. Let's play a little bit for our listeners so they can hear how talented you are.
I got some things I need to do. Don't play mindless games with you. I'm dealing with it. I'm dealing with it.
So listeners, you have to go online and listen to some of Zeke's music. You're really talented. I want to ask you, Zeke, before I let you go, what's next for you? I know that you're working on a documentary about sexual assault, but tell our listeners about what's next, what we can expect, and also how we can keep up with you either online or through social media.
Yes. So actually, on July 8th, my documentary Untold will be making its debut, U.S. debut. It's debuted already in the U.K., and then we're going to be doing a big showing in September in New York. So hope you guys will join me for it. But it takes three black men here in the United States and three black men in the UK. And we discuss our sexual assault experiences and how to get over trauma. It's definitely a hard, hard thing to watch. But it's beautiful also to see that we all are still here and made it through.
And your social media, by the way, are you on Twitter or Instagram? Where can people find you, keep up with you?
Zeke Thomas, that's Z-E-K-E underscore Thomas, T-H-O-M-A-S.
All right. Listeners, this has been activist, producer, DJ, host of Catfish, DJ for Barack Obama,
yes.
Zeke Thomas. Man, it's been a delight to have you join us. We really appreciate you making time for us. Hey, get some rest. You've been there in New York City. I know you're so tired. Get you some rest. We hope to see you soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Zeke. Bye. Have a good day.
All right. You too.
All right, Doc. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be revisited by an old friend to the show.
Okay.
Very, very early on, maybe our first or second year,
mm-hmm.
we had an author, Frederick Smith, who had written a novel that I ran and fell in love with. Anyway, long story short,
yes.
Frederick's back. That was Dr. Frederick Smith.
Yes.
He's back with his co-author of a new novel called In Case You Forgot. We're going to chat a bit about their new novel, but that's after the break. So tell people who we are.
You're listening to Strange Fruit Podcast. To support the work we do on Strange Fruit, visit donate.strangefruitpod.org or look in our show notes for a link. Welcome back. You're listening to Strange Fruit Podcast.
So, and I told you all, I was super excited for our next two guests. One is a longtime friend to the show. One is a new friend to the show.
Yes.
But for several months now, we've been anticipating the release of their newest novel.
I know.
It's a collaborative novel. We got a copy in the mail a few weeks ago. And so the book is called In Case You Forgot. So please welcome to the show co-authors Dr. Frederick Smith and Chaz Lamar. Hello,
Yay.
Gentlemen.
Yay. It's so good to be here.
Now, Frederick, or Dr. Smith, you've been on the show before. You were here, what, several years ago, Doc, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was about 4 years ago. It was in 2015 at the release of my previous novel, Play It Forward. At that time, I was not a doctor. I was thinking about going back to school. And now I've completed that program, but you can still just call me Fred.
All right, Fred.
And 4 years later.
And I remember when you joined us because I didn't realize at the time for your last novel that you had actually written a novel before that. That was one of my most absolute favorite books, Right Side of the Wrong Bed, which was what, like a literary, Lambda Literary finalist,
yeah,
right?
It was a finalist.
And I was telling Doc about how scandalous it was and how I really enjoyed it. So I've always, we've always, of course, been a big fan of your work, Fred.
And we've deeply appreciated your support of Strange Fruit all these years, because you are our number one fruitcake.
Yes.
You are constantly retweeting, and we see you, and we love you, and thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for that
support. Oh, well, thank you. I love you all, too.
Thank you so much. So, Chaz, I have this new book. It's called In Case You Forgot. It tells the story of two newly single Black, queer, and socially aware men. They've decided to pack up and start again. They are in love, to start again, rather, in love, career, and life. Tell us who we meet in you all's novel, and what their names are, and what kind of adventure they set out for.
Well, you meet Zaire James, who turns 30 in the book, and we have Kenny Kane, who is on the cusp of 40. And they both are entering different transitions in their lives, dealing with relationships, friendships, death, and divorces, and work, new work in their lives. And so we see them at a point where so much is happening, and they are new to West Hollywood, California, which is the neighborhood in L.A. County.
How did you all meet up and decide to co-author a book, right? I mean, Dr. Smith, you've been writing novels, you know, single author in all of this. So what kind of provided the window or opportunity or the pathway for you all to meet up and say, hey, let's do a novel together?
All right. So Chaz and I actually have known each other for a few years. And so we've always connected personally, professionally, and in terms of our social justice work. And so Chaz and I had worked together professionally until about a year ago. But I approached him when my publisher approached me and said, hey, we haven't had a book from you in a few years, Fred. We'd like a new novel. And, you know, I was fresh out of grad or out of the doctoral program. And I said, I want to get back into fiction, but I want to do it with someone else. I want to kind of lift someone as I climb, so to speak. And so I said, Chaz, would you like to co-write a novel with me? And Chaz said,
absolutely, let's do it.
Yes.
I didn't hesitate. And Fred has been one of my favorite writers since I started to read like a lot of like queer fiction. Yeah. I started reading Elin Harris when I was about 16. And then after Elin Harris, Fred became like one of my favorite queer Black authors. And so when he asked me, I said, absolutely, duh.
Yeah, duh.
Yeah, and then that's because I had always known that Chaz had done spoken word and poetry and had always had an interest in writing novels. And so I said, this is someone who I think I can write with, because we get along so well, personally and professionally anyway. So it was just a natural extension of our already established friendship.
Yeah. Well, what's the co-writing process like? I mean, you all, both being people who have worked independently, Fred, you haven't done your novels, Chaz, you on your own creative works. How is it, were you all in the same city? Is it literally like, let's go to a room together and write together? Are you on Skype? Are you do a chapter, I do a chapter?
Yeah, like
what
Google
is
docking
like, the literal
it.
Process of like writing a book with somebody? Especially if you're not like living in the same household, if you know.
Exactly. So we started out together, because we didn't know where the novel was going to begin. So we would actually get together on weekend mornings at the West Hollywood Library, because we knew we wanted the novel to be placed in that city. And so we would get together at the library on Saturday and Sunday mornings and just kind of brainstorm ideas or come up with a theme of what our writing would be for the day in terms of the novel. And then from there, once we got established with the first few chapters, we were able to start using Google Docs. One thing that was really fun, though, and Chaz can talk more about this, we both decided to take lead on a particular character. So Chaz took lead on the Zaire James character, and I took lead on the Kenny Kane character. And that's how we were able to do our co-authoring process. And Google Docs was indeed our best friend.
Absolutely. Yes, and so when we decided who we'd taken lead on, at some point, some of the dialogue in the novel, we wrote those together at the moment. So if Fred was writing, for instance, Kenny, and Kenny was in relationship or having conversation with someone else, before Fred would get his thought out on the paper, I would just jump in and write for the other person. And so that changed the flow of the story. And that was fun.
Yeah, it was kind of like improv theater where, you know, the person will kind of leave you with a cliffhanger and then you have to pick up where they leave off. And that's kind of how our writing process was. So it made it very fun and spontaneous and very thoughtful, too, because Chaz would leave one of the characters in a very precarious situation. I'd be like, how am I going to write myself out of this? And we figure it out together.
I just love that. Well, the novel is funny, moving, emotional, right? It explores different themes like love and relationships, long-term partnerships, picking up and moving to a new career. We don't want to spoil it because we want our audience and our listeners to buy it and read it for themselves. But is there any particular moment in the book that is your favorite or that stands out or that was the hardest for you all to write?
Ooh, that's a great question. There are many moments in the book where I read it. I'm still reading it. And I'm trying to read it like a reader. And folks, I'm trying not to have folks' opinions taint my own opinion of reading and experiencing it. But I think one moment that I liked was there's this scene where Zaire's at the cemetery. And so that whole experience of Zaire at a cemetery was very touching to me as I wrote it and as I read it today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Fred?
And for me, the most fun and spontaneous moment was, I'll just say two words, Palm Springs.
yes.
What happens in Palm Springs stays in Palm Springs. And writing that chapter was such a spontaneous moment because we had no idea it was going there, where it went, and we won't spoil it, but Palm Springs, by and large, was the most fun, the most spontaneous, and the most, like, I had my jaw drop when Chaz said, this is where we're going with this chapter. And I was like, okay, we're going there and everything.
Yes. I love Spump.
You all mentioned before that you all knew very early on that this book would be set in West Hollywood. And I think about the movie Moonlight Doc and even the play Moonlight, that Terrell McCraney and Barry, that they use the city as almost his own character from in Miami in that case. Mm-hmm. So why for you all was it important that this be placed in West Hollywood? Did West Hollywood almost become a character in and of itself? Like, why there? Why not Idaho? Why not Louisville, Kentucky?
Well, at the time, I was living in West Hollywood. And so it was a good place to explore. And I frequent West Hollywood before I lived there. And West Hollywood has an interesting relationship with Black people, with people of color. And we wanted to explore that relationship through the lens of these two characters.
And also by placing it in West Hollywood, we were also able to explore some of the issues that a lot of our queer people of color and Black queer communities face, like gentrification, spaces that don't let you in or that ID you 3 and 4 times, or even just kind of the race gendered politics of being a person of color in predominantly white queer places. And that totally was part of the dynamic that Zaire and Kenny experienced in West Hollywood, but also for us as people who go to West Hollywood, something that we were able to reflect on and then reflect in those characters too. So yeah, West Hollywood definitely is, I would almost say, the main character other than Zaire and Kenny, because it's not very frequent to find Black people living in West Hollywood. It's a little expensive, a little pricey, a little white. And so, And these characters also experience some of the same dynamics.
Yeah. No, certainly. Do either one of y'all, when you are writing in the process of writing and also trying to create a character, right? I'm sure the character pops in your head, or at least maybe a mock or a small segment of that character, and then you develop that character over time. Do either one of y'all kind of put some of your own personal stories underneath either one of the characters in the novel, like some aspects, not like you in total, but is there any way, like I'm thinking of, I'm sure y'all seen The Best Man, and you know how Taye Diggs' character, who's a novelist, he kind of basically wrote his life story underneath all these characters and stuff like that. And not to say y'all doing that, certainly. But are there some personal aspects of you all that inform those characters?
Yeah, well, you know, aside from kind of the obvious kind of Black, queer, working professionals kind of identities type of pieces, you know, for me, I experienced a loss that was very similar to the character Kenny Kane in terms of a loss of a parent within the past couple of years. And so the loss of a parent in my life, I wanted to reflect in this character Kenny, because that loss propels Kenny's navigating how to become whole again. And so I really wanted to reflect that aspect in the character, but it also mirrored my own personal life too, going through the grief and loss period.
Yes. And one thing I like about writing fiction is that although it may not be real, it is still truthful. There's so much of our writing is full of truth, and some of our personal lives did come out in the pages, just not in a real way, but in a truthful way.
So, Fred, you're from Detroit, and you, you actually had a former career as a journalist. Talk a bit about, now that you have your PhD, talk a bit about your academic scholarship. What is your passion? What types of things can we look forward to from you? Is there another novel in the works, either solo or collaborative?
Absolutely. So we are thinking about working on a continuation of not Play It Forward, In Case You Forgot. But we're in terms of my own academic scholarship, I finished my my degree in educational leadership for social justice. And so my dissertation focused on the narratives of Black women who were campus activists and who were also involved with issuing demands on their college campuses. They were perhaps involved in their cultural or gender centers on their campus, or involved with women's gender sexuality studies or Pan-African studies on their college campuses. And so I'm really interested in that type of work academically, looking at the ways in which marginalized people have to push institutions and their various settings to be racially just, to be just in terms of gender and sexuality, et cetera. And so that's a little bit about what my academic work falls under. I'm really interested in campus climate issues, making sure that people feel the best they can be and can be their whole selves at their college campuses. And so that's the kind of work I do professionally and the type of work that I hope to be doing more of academically in terms of my writing.
I love it. I love it. Chaz, you are from, as you describe it, the deserts and cities of Southern California. You were raised by your maternal grandparents, and you say that helped inform your compassion towards people struggling with addiction, towards survivors of trauma, and towards elders. You are, you're a brilliant poet, an educator, an activist. Do you have some work that you can share with our listeners now, maybe a bit of a poem that you've written?
Yes, I do. I can share one that I wrote when I was re-entering the dating scene, and I wanted I wanted folks that I was going on dates with to have like a glimpse of who I was at that moment in time. And so this is called When You Tell Your Friend About Me. When you tell your friend about me, tell them the truth. Do not sugarcoat who I have been. Tell them I do not like onions, but I appreciate how they are layered, and they make you cry even if you love them. Share that I am between young and not so young. I have not had an easy life, and sometimes it feels as if it has not been too difficult. Explain to them that the hardest obstacle I've survived was not the bullet that pierced my mother's flesh when I was in her womb, nor was it the second bullet that pierced her while I was at her side at 8 or 9. Explain to them that at 26, it was being fully present while losing she who raised me, my granny. Tell them that that almost took me out. Tell them I am a fighter and I at times cannot take no for an answer. Tell them I'm a survivor who remembers laughing often. Tell them even on my worst days, I still search for joy and that I do not go to bed without acknowledging if I smiled or giggled or knew I was loved that day. You can share simple things too, like my favorite color is green. It reminds me of life at its best. You can say I am tall and not yet as tall as my dad, although he is shrinking because age. Maybe add I love music and that I'm a good dancer, which makes me a good lover. Tell them they need to know I also swoon over shades of brown skin and tell them I've only been in love twice, and out of the two, I was with one for years, and it ended the best way it could have, the same as it started, with love.
I love that.
Gentlemen, you are so very talented. And yes. Just, you know, we've been planning this interview for months and months and months. I'm so excited to have you join us. Fred, you're a longtime friend to the show. Chaz, you're a new friend to the show. We expect you to stick around for years to come as well. I would just reiterate what you all sell. And I told you before, Fred, with Right Side of the Wrong Bed, when you all sell the movie rights to this book, I expect to get a call from the casting couch. I need to audition for somebody something. But
table reading something. Yes.
Table reading, show, play, PA, something.
Well, we can play like extras in it. You know, like
we're extras.
I'm a leading lady, honey.
I don't know. Talk to speak for yourself. But gentlemen, Fred, Chaz,
Issa Rae or Lena Waithe on the phone.
But Fred, Chaz, the novel again. Tell us the novel again and what it's called and where we can find it.
It's called In Case You Forgot, and it is on Bold Strokes Books. You can buy it on any online retailer where you purchase books, or go to any independent or LGBT-focused bookstore, and they should have it as well.
All right. Gentlemen, take care. Be well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank y'all.
All right, so thanks to today's guest. It was a show full of men with energy and zest and zeal.
Okay, vibrancy.
Yeah, vibrancy. It was a fun show. Yeah. And so thank you, of course, to today's guest. Doctor, did you hear about the case of the woman at the Walmart of Texas who... she's been banned from Walmart, okay?
Okay, wow.
This woman had nerve.
Okay.
You know, sometimes you go to the grocery store. I don't know if you... I know that you do. And I'll tell you why I know that you do.
What do you
do? I don't say that you go to the grocery store. You snack on things as you're walking around.
Yes.
You maybe grab a grape or something.
Yes.
Because you and I used to go to that grocery store at Showway, and they have that olive bar. What do you call it? Antipasta bar?
Yeah, the antipasta bar.
And I hate that stuff. The olives
and
all that.
No, but the olives and the mozzarella. I would get a little cup.
Baby.
I would get a little sample cup. The sample cups.
You would fill it with stuffed olives and dates.
And mozzarella. No, dates.
Or something. Whatever. So I know for a fact that you snack at the place, and I, you know, I'll snack on grapes or, you know, preferably a pack of cookies or whatever's open. But no, but this, in this case, a woman, in Texas, in a Walmart, went to the store.
Okay,
she didn't pick up grapes. She didn't pick up olives. She didn't pick up mozzarella balls.
Okay,
she picked up a cake. Like a full size
cake. Oh, from the bakery.
Yeah, a full cake.
Okay.
And she walked around the store doing her shopping, and she ate half the cake. Okay.
But she was going to pay for it, though, because I would do.
Because she gets to the register. Yeah. So you think, if you go get up there. I've gone and like drunk a soda and something to the cup.
Yeah, this bottle of water, so, anything, so she gets and then you go pay for it at the register.
She gets to the register, and they scan the cake, and they say, for example, that's $30. She says, no, there's only half a cake there.
Child, you need to be charging me half price. Stop.
I'm serious.
Oh, my God.
This is June 25th, okay? The Wichita Falls Police Department got a call saying, it was 8 p.m., saying that a woman had allegedly eaten half a cake while she walked into the store. And when she got to the register, she refused to pay for the missing portion.
That she had already eaten.
She told the cashier to give her half off the original price because she was taking home half a cake.
it do take nerve.
Oh, jinx. I mean, it do take nerve.
But now, that's not shady. That's fierce.
Maybe.
Okay.
But a happy ending, of course, she doesn't go to jail. They made her pay for it.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, of course, you know, she was white. No shame. Okay. She didn't go to jail. But listen, as you said, do take nerve. I don't blame her for trying.
Oh, my God. Mopping, you go into a store.
Yes.
You go in. Mopping is stealing. I mean, talk about mopping the cake and then talk about, well, there's only half of it here, so I'm only
$15. Who pays for half?
That is a mess. That's funny. I thought I was doing that kind of stuff. I mean, I thought I was getting bucked when I would, like, open a bottle of water, and then I take it to the register, and I would pay the full price, even though the water would be gone. But, yeah.
This bottle's actually empty?
Yeah. So it's actually, it should be free. I mean, that is...
I'm sorry. Let's go from that story there in Texas to a story that's not very funny. Okay. Based out of Chicago. There was a Chinese-American woman who was working through a recruitment agency to get a job. This Chicago-based company, it's called the Chicago Search Group.
Okay.
So long story short, she had applied for a job, and one of the recruiters was trying to respond to a coworker, but accidentally actually forwarded her his response. So she applies for the job.
Okay.
The dude who's her, who's the manager who's yes. considered hiring her, is trying to communicate with a colleague, but he hits reply instead of forward. And he said that she's Asian American with an Asian American name. He says, "Me love you long time."
Oh my God.
Which is, of course, a racist.
Yeah, racist
trope.
Borrowed from Vietnam. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's so old. So he says, ridiculous, and I hate it.
You know, he was going to forward it to his homeboy, coworker, and says, "Me love you long time." But he actually sends it to the woman herself, okay? And so, of course, she writes back and calls him and confronts him, and he's like, "Oh, I apologize. You know, I know it's an offensive term, but I wasn't trying to be offensive. And in fact, you know, our company loves diversity. You know, the
Oh my God, are you for real?
He says the very fact that I forwarded you, the very fact that I attempted to forward your resume to my colleague, although I made a racist joke, the fact that I was forwarding this email was to say, let's give her an interview. So yes, although I insulted you with the racist, you know, slander,
with this racist
it's because
phrase.
We're going to interview you. So we're really not racist because...
Which, I mean, I don't know what comes first, the chicken or the egg. Like, again, because she responds to his racist-ass email and says, hey, something, something. I mean, my thing is, you were clearly, we're throwing this woman under the bus. You clearly were forwarding the resume because you were trying to make fun and poke fun yes. at her race.
Yes.
Right? So I just don't believe that they were somehow going to actually hire this person with that kind of... And they definitely, to me, ain't concerned about no diversity or committed to it yeah. when you're writing that kind of awful, repugnant stuff. I mean, it's like, whoa, my God.
No, but so... But the main problem is that the dude who did the offensive email
yeah.
got really defensive.
Of course he did.
So he started saying, like, don't you know that, by the way, that phrase comes from... The 1987 movie Full Metal Jacket, again, meant to make fun of Asian sex workers, and it's an old trope. But the dude says, like,
this he is tried to explain
I'm
the
racist. I'm going to just
okay.
read his quote.
Please just read it.
Okay. He says, it was an insensitive inside joke, only meant for my partner. It was an insensitive comment. I realized that. It was a racist comment. I realized that. I had no racist intentions. I'm not racist. I'm certainly not sexist. I know it was 100% in the wrong. I wish it had never happened. I wish I could take it back. It was a huge mistake. I'm sorry. But then he goes on to say, the quote is from a famous movie. Google would have, so when he responds to her, when she inquires, he says, the quote is from a famous movie. Google would have told you that. He said, as the son of two attorneys, even I can recognize that an interpretation is an opinion, not a fact. So basically, he got really defensive. One of the dudes goes on to say that he's married to a black woman, so he can't be racist.
Oh, my goodness.
Look, it goes
from
bad to worse.
Oh, my God.
Y'all can Google the story. Of course, I saw it on Yahoo.com. If you Google this story, you'll get it. But, I mean, it just was a comedy of errors. I mean,
no, I mean, and my thing is, like, and then the key words that I picked up on in his phrasing, right? So he's clearly trying to defend himself. He's on the defensive, right? Anytime you call racist out for being racist, they get really, really angry because a hit dog do holla, as yes. we talked about last show with the Southern phrasing, right? And so the whole term inside joke, right? It was an inside joke, right? So he says in the email, it was an inside joke, like meaning me and this other white man, we laugh about these yes. things behind people of color's backs yeah, and yeah. it's funny and it's okay.
But no one is racist.
And of course, white people don't, you know, they're not bothered by it because, you know, we're all in on the whole white supremacy racist game. So the whole, like, it was an inside joke, then has the audacity and nerve to say, why don't you go and Google the phrase as if yeah. this woman doesn't know where it's rooted, yeah. where it's rooted or where it comes from, right? So, I mean, that's like somebody telling me that they do that kind of thing to me, for instance, and then telling me, like, well, why don't you go and look up African-American history and where that actually the term the N-word comes from? Because maybe you need to be aware of racism as it has impacted your people. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it is, it's racist. It's audacious. Yeah. I mean, it is like...
Well, as we said before, it do take nerves.
Yeah, there's just no yeah. limits to the cognitive dissonance of white racism. The fact that he sent this email back and really thought that we were going to hire you. We are committed to diversity. I'm the son of two attorneys. It was an inside joke. All of those things in this person's brain yeah. made that, you know, he really felt like, yeah, no, this is going to convince her that we didn't mean it.
Yeah.
Or and that she shouldn't be offended.
She still kind of want to yeah. come work for
and
us.
And then she should yeah. still want to come work for the company. It's like, yo,
yeah.
that kind of dissonance, I mean, wow. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Before we go, like, last story, Doc. So there is a new streaming service coming. Streaming services, of course, like Netflix, Hulu, those kind of services that aren't necessarily cable channels.
Okay.
And this new one is from WarnerMedia. They have their own streaming service coming. And so they're really considering rebooting some old television shows from TGIF. You remember TGIF?
Oh, yeah.
So some, and I want to get your opinion on which of these are worth rebooting. And also, I want to hear from you, what show would you reboot if you were the showrunner, the executive? So they're considering reproducing Family Matters.
Oh, I love Family Matters.
Of course, with Steve Urkel.
Yeah, I used to love that show.
Carl Winslow.
Yeah, I used to love that. Although, as I've grown up and become an adult, like Urkel and that character really is really, really wildly problematic. I mean, literally, he was a stalker. He didn't take no for an answer. He was consistently and constantly harassing Laura. So I see it in a completely different light as opposed to
a lot of shows
aww.
Back when we used to watch. Like, I mean, there's the whole thing on YouTube with Zach from Saved by the Bell. Zach was problematic. How he was really a creeper. And anyway,
always trying to sneak in the girls' locker room and peek at them and stuff like that. So yeah, like the television shows and movies back then just really did not have any kind of critical lens when it came to assault,
the people
stalking.
Didn't either. I mean, Donald Trump's hate
was
in the 80s.
I mean, even St. Elmo's Fire. I told you I'd watched that the other day. And in St. Elmo's Fire, Emilio Estevez's character, and it's, again, the Brat Pack and Molly Ringwald's in it and Demi Moore and all them, Rob Lowe. And in St. Elmo's Fire, you know, Emilio Estevez develops this really problem with Andy McDowell's character, who's a physician. And he literally stalks her, follows her hither and yon, even to the cabin that she's staying in the mountains with her fiance. And then they invite him in. And the fiance is like, oh, my God, poor guy. He's just so, you know, strung out on you and all this. I mean, literally excusing his stalking, creepy behavior.
I've never seen that.
Oh, yeah.
It's
a movie from the 80s and it's pretty famous. But yeah, I watched it just the other day because it was on TV, I said, wait a minute, hold up. Like, this is, like, not good. Yeah. Like, this is...
Well, that's like when you and I watched, I think, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer one Christmas in your apartment. I was like, I cut it off because it was too traumatic.
Me and MJ tried to watch it because we love the, like, claymation. Yeah. Are they claymation or what are they?
Yeah, stop motion.
Oh, my God. I love those Christmas stories. And we watched it and we were like, okay, this is, like, abuse.
It was kind of brutal to, like...
Yeah, the way that the reindeer and Santa included Santa.
Yeah, it was bad.
So anyway,
we got Family Matters.
Okay, Family Matters.
We got Hanging with Mr. Cooper. Do you remember that?
Oh, I remember that, too. Yes.
And also, The Perfect Strangers.
Perfect Strangers, yes.
So, but if you were the boss, what shows from the 70s, 80s, 90s are worth revisiting to you? Maybe one or two shows.
Oh, my God. From, like, when I'm a little kid?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You
but
can't go
it,
with
the problem is you don't want to recreate it because you are so endeared to the
You know
the
how
original.
I am. You know I don't like no remake,
yeah,
no remix.
You don't like a reboot
no
at all.
Reboot or no revisiting.
Yes.
I'm not into it. And so, but the unfortunate thing about that is that all the shows, I mean, again, I did grow up in Ann Arbor.
Yes.
And, you know, so a lot of my kids' shows that were my faves were overwhelmingly white.
Okay.
I mean, so for me, Melrose Place.
Okay.
90210.
I love that even as a child, you were watching grown people shows. I'm sitting here thinking I'm like, hey, look, Mr. Cooper. You're like, Sex After Dark. I'm like,
Sex After Dark. I mean, 90210 had no sex in it.
Girl.
And Melrose Place didn't
either.
Yes,
it was. It went all about how that girl was a virgin. Yeah,
but,
girl.
You know, my parents are divorced, and so I used to call my dad every Wednesday night, so we would watch over the phone together.
Okay.
90210 and Melrose Place back to back.
Which are very adult shows. For
I mean, they were not. They were not adult souls. Okay. I mean, first of all, I was in middle school, and yeah, I mean, but my parents were, you're right, my parents never kind of altered whatever they were watching. For my, like, young
which
palate.
Is good.
She's like, we're going to watch Color Purple when you're 7. We're going to watch Imitation of Life when you're 5. So you learn about white supremacy and racism. I mean, we walk out of the Jungle Book when I'm 3 because my dad swears that the monkeys were supposed to be black people. So he cussed the screen out and cussed everybody out in the theater. And then he said, let's go. You know what I mean? And yelled at me. And I said, I just want to see the rest of the cartoon. He's like, it's racist. Are you a monkey? Let's go. You know what I mean? So he was, you know, my parents
never...
Your
family clearly took media seriously. I would remake probably...
Yes.
Do you remember Small Wonder?
Oh, Small Wonder. Yeah, I might remake Wonder Years. I loved Wonder Years.
See, again, that was
you
way
didn't
too
watch
sophisticated,
Wonder
sophisticated
Years?
For my... It was way too sophisticated.
What are you talking about? It was not sophisticated.
It was for me. I would have just watched a lighthearted sitcom. You know, you're like watching these hour-long dramas.
Because it's like Joe Cocker and that intro song
was
so
good.
Yeah.
So, will you sing a bit of a voice?
What would you do if I sang
all the
tunes? Yes.
On that note, y'all.
But those two are my childhood
very, very,
favorites.
Very good shows. Yes. Very good shows. All right, I love your list too. Well, we're out of time. We hope you had a good Pride Month. Again, thanks to our guest. Thank you, as always, to our fruitcakes for hanging with us. We love you all. You're the best fans of the world.
Yes.
By the way, we don't know if we told people we got awarded the best podcast at the Indianapolis PopCon Festival.
Yes.
We got awarded the best LGBT podcast for the second year in a row. But we also got this year the best overall life and culture podcast.
So
that's the team Strange Fruit.
Okay, congrats.
Shout out to Cogen and all the folks at WFPL and Louisville Public Media who have a hand in making this all happen each week. Shout out to you, Doc. But we're out of time. Telling people goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Strange Fruit is produced by Louisville Public Media. Our engineer is Cogen Toshiro.
For more information about Strange Fruit, visit strangefruitpod.org. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Strange Fruit Pod.
The views expressed on Strange Fruit do not reflect those of Louisville Public Media, its staff, or its underwriters.
Strange Fruit is produced by me, Kyla Story.
And me, Jason Gardner.
Thanks for listening.